What's that?
We're not focal.
We're not focal. I guess we're getting ready, right?
Okay, so, so we began discussing, we're going to try to discuss some broader issues. And so let's make some, I don't have so much time today, but we'll, again, try to get in at least our regular slot to continue this hakdama, and then we'll try to be more concrete on specific issues next time. So I think the first time we, in this group of, I guess, the talks, we talked about the Aseres HaDibros, and we talked about the idea of Kol HaDibarim, the idea of, the Aseres HaDibros kind of encapsulizing, and therefore kind of projecting the uniqueness of the Torah as a hashkafa, both the range and the balance. These are all different things: the range, the balance, the idea that there are priorities within that balance, the idea of specialization. That these are all aspects, integration. That all of these things going on at the same time, which is obviously quite complex, but also a very aspirational spiritual agenda or religious agenda, is really what the moment of Gilui Hashchina symbolized. And I was suggesting that that's also one of the reasons that this notion of Kol HaDvarim, about everything being both diverse and integrated at the same time, but especially the special status of Chefetz Shel Torah for the Aseres HaDibros, which I think has numerous aspects or dimensions to it, but I think all of them also relate to this question. That that's kind of that moment of Gilui Hashchina already captured this ambition and this project, if you will. but given that, of course, the question then becomes, how to follow through with that? Like, what is the source of hashkafa or dveikus or yira, right? That is intended, or avas Hashem, which is intended to be conveyed through this like massive and magnificent system, and especially what is going to be singular, both in terms of priorities and especially the character, let's say, of how this project or agenda is supposed to unfold. So in the next parsha, the parsha that we just read this past Shabbos, Parshas Mishpatim, right, we have, I think, further elaboration on that point. In addition to the beginning of the parsha, of course, Elah Mishpatim, and the idea of, that's where you have the Pirtei Pratim of Choshen Mishpat. But again, it's presented in a way which, as many Mepharshim note, would be undecipherable, right, without a without a Mesorah, a Torah Shebaal Peh. So you have the nitty gritty of a civil legal system, which any culture has, but the Torah's particular spin on it, and requiring a Mesorah to apply it and to. And even to decipher it. Again, that's Bava Kamma topics for next year, for those who will be here. But symbolically, what that establishes is something that we've talked about many, many times, and that is that, both the most unusual, exotic, in other words, singular, let's say, aspects of the halacha, as well as the most overlapping, parts that are most in common with other cultures, are going to be reflecting what is unique, what is singular about Yad. It's obviously the exotic things, because there's nothing to compare them to. They highlight the inner logic, the taros and the kadshim and the zraim, and even other aspects of the other starim. But even ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lefnehem, even when you have to warn against arkos, even when you're saying afilu kishidineim kidineinu, and that's exactly the point of Dineim Kedineinu doesn't capture it because of the connection to everything. That's something we've talked about many, many, many times. Highlights that Yadus, even when it overlaps, Dafka when it overlaps, is singular as a program, again, as a method of developing the relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it's fitting that at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and the Mepharshim really struggle with this, that we encounter the sisma, I guess one could say, the slogan that came for all time, you know, to represent Klal Yisrael's commitment. I'm referring, of course, to Na'aseh V'Nishma, right? We find that removed a little bit from Aseret HaDibros, Gilui Shechina, and Yisro, with the intervening, you know, sections of Mishpatim as kind of the bridge between them. And I think there's a lot, again, discussion of V'Mukdam V'Mu'uchar. If indeed this is an example of Ein Mukdam V'Mu'uchar, which is the discussion in the Mefarshim, Alatar, Rashi, and Ramban, and others. Even those who think that, you know, Ein Mukdam V'Mu'uchar B'Torah is more frequent, they have to, you know, have some sort of justification for it. Right? The Torah is not going to be out of order. It might be more frequently out of order and less frequently out of order. And that also may determine, you know, how significant being out of order is. Obviously, the more uncommon it is, the rarer it is, the more there needs to be a very good explanation for it. But in all cases, being unsystematic or out of order, right, is intentional. Obviously, the juxtapositions then become more important. So it's important to zero in on that bridge, just alluding to that, but we're not going to talk about that today. But also just on the formulation itself. And what's fascinating is that in the Torah itself, right, there could have been two different psukim, even in the section in Mishpatim, right, which could have become Klal Yisrael's slogan. The first one, of course, is Vayava Moshe Vayisaper La'am Eis Kol Divrei Hashem. Right, this is Perek Chaf Daled Pasuk Gimel. The Eis Kol Mishpatim Vayan Kol La'am Kol Echad Vayomru Kol Advarim Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh. And that's already, that's a powerful pasuk, right? Moshe Rabbeinu came, he repeated to Klal Yisrael, he told, he conveyed to Klal Yisrael, Eis Kol Divrei Hashem, the Eis Kol Mishpatim, and all the Mishpatim, right? Vayan Kol Ha'am, Kol Echad, Vayomru, right? Kol HaDvarim Asher Dibar Hashem Na'aseh. Just, you know, when we say it, it comes, you know, we just want to finish the sentence, you know, Na'aseh V'Nishma. But, you know, if you do, they're going to correct you if you're the, you know, Baal Kore. So then we have almost, that's almost like a false start. And then the Torah continues, Vayichtov Moshe, right? Eis Kol Divrei Hashem, Vayashkem Baboker, Vayiven, Mizbeach Tachasahar, Shtemesre Matseva, Lishnemasar Shifte Yisrael, Vaishlachas Narebine Yisrael, Vayalu Olos, Vayizbuch Luzvachim, Shlamim Lashem Parim, Vayikach Moshe, Chatzi Adam, Vayasim Baganos, right? Vachatzi Adam, Vazarak al Hamizbeach, Vayikach Sefer Abris, Vayikra Bazne Aam, Vayomru, Kolashar Dibar Hashem, and here you have it, Nase Vinishma. So some of the Mefarshim explicitly ask, you know, why this delay? Why not mention Na'aseh V'Nishma, you know, earlier? Or why not? Another way to formulate the question is, like, what's wrong with just saying Na'aseh? That's also just an incredible level of commitment. You could argue that, we're going to say that it's not so, but one could have argued, I should better say, you know, that saying Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Na'aseh, in theory, right, could have been a superior, a more intense commitment than Na'aseh V'Nishma. Right? Maybe that's not contingent upon understanding, you know, at all. It's just a total embrace, you know, a total, let's say, leap of faith. So, either way, why this delay, why this false start, why the Na'aseh V'Nishma rather than the Na'aseh? It's at least something to ask. The Kli Yakar asks this question, and he has a whole explanation, depending on whether, you know, where the Aseret HaDibros were, whether it's Aseret HaDibros already, or was it, you know, that Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach and the Dinim of Mara. And he has this whole suggestion that basically, you know, it wasn't clear what the tochen of Torah or the scope of Torah would be, whether it was going to be more limited, let's say Aseret HaDibros, or in the other views, I say Sheva Mitzvos and the Mitzvos of Mara, or there were going to be more, you know, greater scope, the rest of Kol HaTorah Kula. That's his explanation. Clearly, That's an interesting perspective. The Ben Ezra of all people, in the Perush HaKotzar, has a very powerful line, and is clearly troubled by this change. It's fascinating to note in general that, at least to me, it's striking. I don't know if anybody else makes this point or not, but it's a very, you know, again, we all know Nasa Manishma. We zero in on it and became the slogan for Klal Yisrael. They even, you know, sing songs, you know, about Nasa Manishma. And they should. But it's given that, it's particularly fascinating, the dearth of Parshanut on Nasa Manishma. It's very heavily developed in the Medrash and in the Gemara and Shabbos on Daf Peches, and very scantily, you know, practically ignored, you know, by the Mefarshim al Atar. I mean, you know, you're expecting to see, you know, really, you know, major discussion and elaboration and development. Rashi pretty much, again, the Unklus and, you know, the other Targumim just translate Nasa Manishma. They don't really add much. Rashi ignores it. Ramban doesn't say much, pretty much ignores it as well. Again, there are some Perushim here and there. The Rashbam says that Nasa Manishma means, you know, Nasa, you know, whatever was received kvar, and Nishma is, you know, a commitment for the future. Sfarno speaks about Nasa v'nishma, you know, Nasa Kadesha Nishma, that it's a Lishma, that the purpose of the Nasa is, you know, unequivocally, you know, so that we will be connected with and driven by or directed by Kol Hashem. So there are Perushim and some other Perushim as well. But mostly, again, the Rabbeinu Chananel here is Nasa, Yimitzvah Kalelis Mitzvah Saseh, Mitzvah So Saseh, also tries to explain. But most of the Mefarshim really are very silent. I suspect that it's for one of two reasons, either because this is so developed and so you know, developed in a, almost like a normative way in Chazal, so they just didn't want to, you know, tamper with it, or maybe because it became, again, the representation or the slogan, the symbolic, you know, representation of the, you know, intensity of Klal Yisrael's commitment. Maybe the Mefarshim were just a little bit, you know, concerned, you know, lest it be, you know, trivialized, lest they not do full justice, you know, to Nasa v'Nishma. But mostly, a lot of them, you know, the Mefarshim we would expect to be weighing in and elaborating, Rishonim at least, are very quiet about it. And I think, again, there's a certain understanding that Nasa v'Nishma kind of stands on its own, and that, you know, Kolomosiv Goreya, you have to be careful, you know, what you say about it, because, again, of the impact that it has had. Having said that, so what is significant about Nasa v'Nishma? So on the one hand, it's certainly the Seder HaDvarim. It's the fact that the Nasa came before the Nishma, which obviously reflects a certain incredible faith and intensity of commitment. Typically, Havana is something that, you know, is prior to commitment, especially for a skeptical man, a rational man. Again, it's interesting that Rav Sajigon in his Perush, and again, Ibn Ezra in the Perush HaKotzar quotes it, really, you know, flipped it. It's very remarkable, actually. Here on Pasuk Zayin, Vayikra Vayikra, Dvar Shantzu Nasa V'Nishma, Nishma Enu V'Na'asenu. So, obviously, he didn't think that was the main point. The Ibn Ezra has a terrific line in the Perush HaKotzar, where he says, Vayikra, he alludes, I think, to some of the things that, you know, could be said based on the psukim. Vayikach Sefer HaBris, Hushakasa, Vayikra Ba'aznei Ha'am, Vayomra, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Nasa V'Nishma, Ubetchila Siper Lahem, Va'anu Kol Echad. Right? Ki'ilu Kol Echad Nasa. So again, by saying these words, the Ibn Ezra is basically saying, Vim Tomar, you know, previously the Torah already almost said the same pasuk, you know, without the nishma, and it was kol echad, and it was after Sipur, right? V'ata, and now kara be'aznehem kol hakasuv v'hosifu v'nishma. He doesn't explain why. He just is describing some very important differences, right? Previously, the Torah speaks about not a ksav, not a Torah shebiksav, but a sipur. Now the Torah speaks about a Torah shebiksav, right? Vayikach sefer habris. In the interim, we're told that it was written down, right? Vayikra ba'azne ha'am, as opposed to vayisaper. There it was that b'kol echad, but here it's vayomru, kol asher dibar Hashem naaseh v'nishma. Then you have the nishma. That's what he says, v'atam naaseh, I'm sorry, v'hosifu v'nishma, v'atam naaseh kol hakatuv, v'nishma osam tamid, shelo yishkach mipinu. Then he quotes the Rav Sadja Gaon HaGaon Omer ki muktam u'muuchar, meaning not in the muktam u'muuchar normal sense, but in the sense that, you know, naaseh v'nishma really means nishma v'naaseh. Oh, naaseh ha-mitzvah sanatuas b'lev, v'nishma mitzvah sa-kabbalah. Or maybe it's a reference to two categories, right? The mishpatim and the, I think that's very important. I'll get to it in a minute. Chukim. Oh, nasa kol ha-mitzvah shetzivanu ad ata, v'nishma kol ha-mitzvah sa-asidos, like the Rashbam. Oh, nasa mitzvah sa-asei, v'nishma mitzvah sa-asei. Clearly, Ibn Ezra is bothered. Like, what's the addition of nasa v'nishma? And why nasa alone wasn't enough? And he's trying to suggest that this relates, the last suggestions, plural, are to the hekef of Torah, to its, you know, duality, if you will, right? How can the same system have Essen and Lavin? What kind of system is it? You know, chukim, you know, and mishpatim, you know, laws that apply and laws that will apply, maybe the capacity, you know, to expand upon them and apply them in a different way in the future. But I think the most important thing that he says is this idea that nasa v'nishma is a different kind of a nasa, right? It's nasa kol hakasuv v'nishma osam tamid shelo yishkach mipinu. It's nishma is a perspective on the nasa. It's internalizing the nasas to such an extent that you can guarantee shelo yishkach mipinu. And that's a very powerful thing. And just going back to it, I think there are several things to say. Number one, part of the commitment of Klal Yisrael, and the reason this is connected to Bris, is the fact that it is Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Ksiva and the Kriya, as opposed to the Sipur, is critical. Moreover, previously, suggesting, in the absence of Mepharshim helping us out so much, Vayomer kol ha-dvarim asher dibar Hashem naaseh, but it's Vayavo Moshe vayisaper la'am es kol divrei Hashem ve'es kol ha-mishpatim. And here, it sounds like that's integrated. Here it's Vayikach sefer habris, Vayikra ba'oznei ha'am, Vayomeru kol asher dibar Hashem naaseh v'nishma. So I think it's the ksiva and the kriya. It's also the integration of mishpatim, you know, with everything else, and that has a double meaning. Number one, you know, mishpatim in the sense of civil law, but also in the sense of integrating the norms, meaning mitzvos and chiyuvim and sivuyim, with the broader idea of what a Dvar Hashem is all about. And of course, part of this also is connected to the fact that there is the building of a mizbeach with 12 matzevos, each one reflecting one of the shvatim, which I think goes to the idea of, on the one hand, kol echad, all of Klal Yisrael, you know, embracing this idea of Torah that you have in the Nasa, but the idea of embracing it, you know, in totality and all of it, and also acknowledging at the same time the specialization, meaning the different perspectives provided by each of the shvatim, going back to, again, to, you know, Parshas Vayichi and Yaakov Avinu's, you know, bracha to each of the shvatim, and then the pasuk that follows that Chazal say, "Bin ish kibir chaso asher birach osam," you know, the specialization and the adoption by each member of Klal Yisrael for himself of the specialization. I think these are some of the changes that took place between Na'aseh v'Nishma, that made Na'aseh v'Nishma, instead of Na'aseh, right, ultimately, the slogan of Klal Yisrael. To take it a little bit further, I said before, you know, one might have thought that Na'aseh was a greater level of commitment. And again, from a certain, you know, perspective of religious phenomenology, we could make that argument. But I think the Na'aseh v'Nishma emerged because upon deeper reflection, Na'aseh v'Nishma is a greater commitment, you know, than Na'aseh. Na'aseh, and it's not just the order, again, it's kind of what the Ibn Ezra is putting his finger on, and that is the, you know, the depth or the transformation of what Na'aseh is really all about. It's certainly a very intense level of commitment simply to say Na'aseh and to suspend any kind of rational judgment. There's no question that that is true. But at the same time, there's something you know, easier, maybe more elemental, you know, but in some respect, less complicated about just saying Na'aseh. It's the idea that, you know, religion, you know, and rationality are two different disciplines, you know, and never the twain shall meet. They, you know, in there's a debate, you know, whether or not there really was like a practical double truth theory among medievalists. It's associated with Averroes, but people talked about it at least, and there was a certain, on the one hand, obviously the ultimate in compartmentalization, but something appealing, you know, about keeping your humanity and your spirituality, you know, separate. And the idea of saying, oh, there are two truths. There's a scientific truth, there's a rational truth, and then there's a divine, spiritual, you know, and religious truth. You know, the idea that religion isn't irrational, but let's say that it's irrational, meaning it's not rational, it's faith. And there's something very heady about a leap of faith. And, you know, that kind of protects religion from certain kind of critique. It protects your humanity and your spirituality in a certain way. But it also calls for a certain kind of schizophrenia in the end of the day. And it's more than ironic, and therefore maybe the reason why it's ultimately unacceptable, right, that, you know, the nishma, which flows from Tzelem Elokim, right, the ability to be discerning, man's intellectual capacity, his ability to be critical and to analyze things, to think about things, and to have self-awareness, that all flows from Imatat Yodei, Lehidamos Lashem, and Tzelem Elokim. And there can be, and there are religions that really, as they say, are based on this notion of Na'aseh. And there's usually not so much Na'aseh in those religions either, in terms of the material, but a Na'aseh divorced from a Nishma is impressive, but as I say, it's in some respects an easier religious commitment to manage. And there are some who go further with this, and you know, who even embrace a notion of an irrational, you know, religion, a kind of Kierkegaardian, you know, notion of paradox or absurdity. People were drawn to, you know, Kierkegaard's interpretation of the Akedah precisely for this reason. Things that, you know, are difficult to understand, so instead of just saying we suspend judgment or rationality and spirituality are two different things, so to say that, you know, on the contrary, you know, religion is so all-consuming, it demands of us, right, embracing the paradox. There's something, you know, quasi-mystical about it. I say quasi because even without, in other words, defining, you know, mystical content, there's something, you know, in the orientation about that is mystical. And there's something charismatic. I'm not talking about an inner logic of chukim, you know, paraduma, trying to understand it, you know, believing that there is an inner logic, even if we can't identify it, but the notion that, you know, that there isn't one, and that, you know, the paradox is something beyond us, mystical. There's a certain, like, self-sacrificial, again, tendency, right, to surrendering, you know, not just suspending belief or suspending our understanding, but to basically discarding it, you know, for the sake of religion. And here and there, there certainly is the necessity, if it's a question of faith in the Rabbona Shalom, if you talk about the Akedah, suspending belief, you know, embracing, you know, things that seem to be paradoxical, even if we can't come up with a solution, that certainly is part of our faith as well. But that's quite different from, you know, making this the, you know, the apex, let's say, of religion. And Yahadus never did. On the contrary, the notion of Tzelem Elokim and the Idamos, and to understand the Nasa without the Nishma, you know, is hugely flawed. And even if it isn't flawed, the point is it is notwithstanding like the initial impression, it's not the most intense and the most ambitious form of religiosity. You know, understanding that, you know, religion demands of us a surrender and an embrace of things that we, you know, wouldn't have come up with on our own. The requirement, let's say, of reconstruction or of suspension, you know, of understanding. You know, when understanding remains an important ingredient and something that is religiously admired, even necessitated, in the end of the day, is a much greater test. And from, you know, the dawn of time, that's what has been demanded of man, as Tzelem Elokim. And certainly that's what's been demanded of Bnei Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov, and Klal Yisrael. And that's what, you know, took place at Gilui Shechina. And for that reason, not just Nasa, but Nasa v'Nishma, which, as I say, integrated, you know, the commitment level, the Nasa part, and everything positive about it, you know, while acknowledging, and not just acknowledging, but aspiring, you know, to apply the Nishma as well. And that's why I think the Ibn Ezra's words are very, very, very powerful. Maybe part of that required, you know, that there be a Torah Shebichsav, that we be Korei and not merely Mesaper, the specialization parts, the Karbonos parts, and as I say, the integration of Mishpatim into Kol HaTorah. But I think, this is where we get back to our topic, that there may be another, even more ambitious way to understand Nasa v'Nishma, and that is certainly in light of, not dependent upon, but in light of the Rav's major contribution, you know, to Jewish thought, and that is the idea of ishalacha, the idea of, you know, values, really, that come from the norms. I don't know that he said this, but I like to say it. Based on the perspective of ishalacha, and that is maybe that's ultimately what Nasa v'Nishma is, and that's why it represents the heights or the most, you know, ambitious possible slogan, you know, for Kabbalah Satorah. And that is that the Nasa, right, should not just be integrated with, when it's possible, Havana, Muka, but that it should create, you know, a different kind of understanding, an inner logical understanding. Again, suspension of you know, human rationality, you know, in favor of, you know, an inner logic, halachic, and divine rationality. Right? A Nasa, which isn't just, you know, become part of us, and therefore it's, you know, you can guarantee shelo yishkach mizaro, but where the values, in other words, flow from the, you know, from the norms, and where the reconstruction of the norms are the basis for, they're really the core of the unique values. And again, that is something that affects, you know, Mishpatim every bit as much as it does Taharos, although they are two extremes, but they're two extremes that share that in common. And that's really what's singular about Torah commitment. In that sense, it's much more than Nasa, and it's certainly not Nishma v'Nasa. It's really Nasa, you know, the Nishma in the highest sense. So this is really, I think, background, you know, to what we want to spend a little bit of time on, and that is trying to understand, like, different perspectives on how seemingly, you know, what are the sources of, you know, hashkafa and belief, you know, and again, the goal of, you know, living a life in this coming week's parsha of Hashra Sashkina, or living a life of Kedusha. So again, the Ish Halacha, let's say, philosophy, has a very particular view of all of this, in which, again, the Parshanut, Anasa V'Nishma, I'm not blaming on the Rav, I'm accepting responsibility for that as my own, but again, this mentality obviously catapults, right, the halachic norm, you know, and its understanding, you know, and its you know, being a foundation for, like, a perspective on you know, on everything and on anything, in a very, you know, central way. And it's not coincidental that, you know, this orientation is incompatible, let's say, with, you know, looking outside or to extraneous, even admirable, like, extraneous sources, right, for, you know, spiritual direction and certainly, you know, things that define spiritual attainment that come from outside, you know, of the world of halacha, or strictly the world of Torah. So the question of, like, how, you know, one attains, you can call it dveikus, or yiras Hashem, or avas Hashem, you know, within the system of halacha, but what other aids, you know, are appropriate, if other aids are appropriate, and, you know, how that fits in, I guess, with this orientation, like, becomes a very crucial question. Because if you believe that, you know, basically the halacha, right, is just, you know, kind of a, you know, litzarefa sabrios, you know, in the sense of, you know, it's a test for man, a test of, you know, his will and his commitment, you know, more the nasa part, if you will. So it's not at all, you know, inconceivable or even improper to think that, you know, there's still a whole rich area of, you know, creating a kesher with the Rabbono Shel Olam, which requires aid, and, you know, maybe there are appropriate methods or mechanisms, instruments, you know, to use to kind of develop and to forge, right, those aspects. So if you take that view, you know, so you have the Shemiras HaMitzvos, which you're obligated to follow, and, you know, they definitely, you know, provide, you know, a direction in life in terms of what one should be occupied with. And Limud HaTorah is the study of, you know, both the content of Torah and especially is the mechanism that allows for, you know, building, you know, a proper life of Shemiras HaMitzvos, Lumod Amnas Lasos, and Lasuke Shmaitza Liba Dehilchasah. And maybe you could go further and say that there are behavioristic, you know, consequences and implications to many of the mitzvos. Certainly in the area of Mishpatim, that is certainly the case. And maybe mystically even in some of the others. You know, so both in terms of credit, in terms of the effect this has on, you know, let's say neutralizing other forces that could be harmful or corrupting or undermining. all of this, you know, is part of Shemiras HaMitzvos, which remains a very central occupation. There's no proper or appropriate system of Yahadus in which Shmiras HaHalacha and Limud HaTorah, right, is not central. But what I'm trying to say is that if you don't take, you know, the fullness of this view, certainly one could conceive that it's also appropriate, right, to have other sources, whether they be Jewish mysticism, more likely internal sources, but maybe even more universal sources, you know, philosophy or Jewish philosophy. You know, there's a whole discussion, you know, in among the Rishonim in particular, those who identified, you know, with the philosophical enterprise, you know, some of them, you know, were like impelled, you know, to adopt, you know, the historical view, you know, that that philosophy had its, you know, origins, you know, in Jewish sources, you know, at least as a Masorah. And obviously there, you know, it's not for us to decide whether that, you know, is credible or not at this moment. It doesn't really matter so much one way or another, but we understand where the impulse comes from, because if we're talking about a very specific type of religiosity, and which is going to be wedded with a very dominant, no matter what, a very dominant Shmiras HaMitzvos and Limud HaTorah, but you think that the supplements, let's say, either to overcome other things, or even in a positive way, like to achieve like a certain very high level, are also, it's very legitimate, you know, to be invoking, you know, general philosophical ideas. So then, you know, psychologically, at minimum, it would be helpful to think that these have a Jewish or halachic origin. In the end of the day, one could also argue that even if they don't, that that's part of the legacy of, you know, of rationality or human rationality, and in a universal way, there are universal aspects which man can, you know, acquaint himself with, and that he can marshal, you know, which wedded with, you know, the singular nature of halachic commitment of Nasar, Nasav and Ishma, as understood in a certain way, right, still form, you know, the focus of his spiritual life. And certainly there are many Mefarshim who seem to take that view. Certainly many of the medievalists give very great weight to philosophy and other such things, as we know, the Rambam and Rav Sajagon. I'm not suggesting that they had the other parts of this orientation, but at least that slice certainly can be identified, you know, numerous you know, inspirational paradigms of thought, and the Chofetz Chabad and even the Kuzari, you know, who is much more skeptical about the contribution of philosophy, you know, still, as you know, has been noted in more recent times by historians, you know, was hardly an obscurantist. He was somebody definitely who was embracing, you know, philosophical jargon and you know, whatever his critique was, it was an internal critique of somebody who remained, you know, of that philosophical orientation. Those who embraced the world of Kabbalah had less of an issue because, as a mystical, you know, pursuit, it already, you know, is kind of inoculated for some of the criticism, and certainly less universal, and it's certainly much more internal. But again, the idea that, you know, you can get your beyond a certain level, that your spirituality or your dveikus, you know, comes from or is enhanced by that component, you know, and not so much by the more exoteric acts of Shmiras HaMitzvos or even of Limud HaTorah, those are systems that we are familiar with. On the other hand, the more you think, you know, that Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, or that the Nasa V'Nishma, like, is really rooted, right, in these categories themselves, and, you know, that's where the values come from, and that, you know, immersing, you know, in Havayas, the Havaya V'Rava, is also the best method to creating that bond, and it's the Mokor of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, which the Halacha itself certainly projects very strongly, and which many giants of Jewish thought, many of whom are also giants of halacha, projected. So then, these, I guess, more external sources become much more questionable. Again, not necessarily to be rejected, but at least how you formulate, what their function is and role is. Is it that, hafochba, fochba, dekulaba, nasa v'nishma, the Torah's Hashem Tamima, it's self-sufficient and it represents perfection. And, if we were on the proper level and if we followed the proper course, we would be able to access internally everything that we need. However, not everybody is on that level, not everybody follows that path, or maybe, there's a process which unfolds over a longer period of time, and, in the interim period, you don't want to leave people adrift, so there are other, ways to supplement, the spiritual, I guess the more obvious spiritual side that needs to be integrated with the Shmiras HaMitzvos. That's one way. Then it becomes, a question also of level, and as I say, different eras might call for different, different challenges, may call, for different kinds of supplementing. But in the end of the day, those kind of, we have a more suspicious or critical or bidyeved, let's say, perspective on all of that. So this becomes, I think, a very interesting issue. Again, in the extreme, the world of Brisk, certainly, and many parts of the, Lithuanian, oriented world generally, was, halachocentric, not only, with respect to what people should be focusing on, but, again, in terms of this aspiration of where, even the more, let's say, obvious, spiritual and religious, impulses come from. And so this became really a crucial question in, numerous issues. The relationship between, limud and maaseh, partly, where you have conflicting statements in Chazal, and people, have already charted the fact, just one second, that, there's different, Mefarshim have different interpretations of what, either different statements in Chazal, just in the Talmud itself, never mind adding Medrash and Avos, Godal Talmud, Shemebi L'day Masa, what does that mean? Things like, statements like that can be understood in two opposite ways, right? I mean, Talmud as an instrument for Masa, or, on the contrary, Masa is just, reflection or an instantiation or a concretization of Talmud. So that's one of the questions. Nasa v'nishma, another. The idea of Lidrosh HaSalakim, which we find in Bereishis, and we find it here again with respect to Yisro, talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, who said, "What do you want from me?" When Yisro, criticized him, he said, "I have to do this because the nation needs me, Lidrosh HaSalakim." And what does that mean, Lidrosh HaSalakim? So again, statements like that, l'mitvah ulpana, that's how Unklus interprets, and Rashi says, means they were asking shilas. They were, it was halachic, discourse. So what, just to know what to do, or because also that is, that's where it really is at. That's where, spirituality and religiosity in its most aspirational, come together as well. In Divrei Yamim and in Shoftim, we find this expression of, Lidrosh as Hashem, and statements like it. And again, the Ramban, of all people, in his Perush on Yisro, doesn't think it refers to tefillah. It refers to, to getting answers for cholim. This question of how, we look at different, let's say, miktzos haTorah, or some miktzos that seem to even be extraneous. I'm not talking about tefillah, chalila, but other things. The relationship between tefillah and Talmud Torah is an issue. The relationship between Talmud Torah and Masa is an issue. As I say, interpretations of things like Lidrosh HaSoelokim becomes an issue. And one of the main issues, as it played out in the last several centuries, is also the question of how to approach, like, the any kind of, you know, extracurricular or seemingly outside or extraneous supplementary sources. And I'm specifically referring to the, you know, the Musar movement. On the one hand, you had the challenge of Hasidut, which was viewed in a certain way. There's a certain parallel between how these were looked at, but also differences. And again, Hasidut purporting to be, you know, the injection. Again, you had it early with Kabbalah, and you had it with philosophy, as I alluded to, and there were different perspectives there. Then you had, with regard to Hasidut, but Hasidut was, you know, additionally complicated by the initially and continuing, but initially very egregious antinomian elements, you know, in some of the early Hasidic practices, which kind of, you know, tainted it and disqualified it. And then, you know, what happened when, you know, Hasidut, you know, developed due to the critique of people, sharp, you know, and critique of the Gra and others, but when it developed in a more mainstream way, it didn't completely shed all antinomian elements, you know, but obviously became much more of an internal expression of Yahadus with the Magmi Mezrich and Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Mipolnoy, and so on. And then, of course, you had the Lithuanian Hasidim, or Lithuanian type Hasidim, and Ger and Lubavitch and Kotsk, and so on. So that's one whole fascinating topic. But the Tnuat HaMusar, the Musar movement, is another one, because there, again, there's no antinomian element, and the centrality of, you know, Talmud Torah and Halacha, you know, is beyond any kind of question or reproach. There it was more the question of the implications of it. Like, you know, why is it appropriate? Do we need, you know, this kind of supplement, you know? And that was one question. And, you know, whether or not also the orientation of at least some of the earlier dominant strands in the Musar movement were consistent with the type of religious or halachic, you know, persona that was considered to be, you know, ideal, you know, in Torah terms. That's how optimistic or pessimistic, you know, the godless or the katnus, the optimism, the pessimism, and, you know, partly the, you know, the response to that was a function of, like, how self-sufficient is Torah, how, to what extent is Torah very intrinsically, like, the basis of our values, and so on, as well as just how you understand the balance in Torah and halachic life more generally. So it's not surprising that Brisk, for example, at least in principle, you know, were very vociferously, right, opposed to the Musar movement, with a recognition that some of the Gedole, you know, Tnuat HaMusar were big, big Talmud Chachamim, or were respected as such. Certainly an internal argument, unlike the Hasidut argument, but still very vehement and very strong. And again, the Rav's very brief, but, you know, fascinating description of this, which I was going to read, but I'm running out of time, so I guess I'll read it next time, is an example of this. The Chazon Ish, who we said we wanted to talk about in Rav Kook, the Chazon Ish has his own very strong critique of the Musar movement. And in Amunah B'Tochen, that's really, I mean, maybe the primary motif in Amunah B'Tochen. Again, it also discusses the questions of Ishtadlut and B'Tochen, which I think are also part of the, again, ideal religious persona responsibility aspects of thing. But the question of Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam and what that implies regarding the need for supplements and so on is a particularly acute issue. So I want to start with this as a haktama, to speak a little bit about what some of the different perspectives were. But before, Avram had a question.
Yeah, I was just wondering if this synthesis between the mice the logic or the deeper understanding. So it's odd in the early Bris would focus on areas of halakha that weren't practical, like in kutchim and other areas.
Well, I think that is, first of all, develop a new discipline, so you're drawn to, I think, the things that accentuate it the most, number one. And I think what drew Brisk to those areas of halacha was precisely their inner logic. So, there is nothing, you can't confuse Dine Taharos or Kachin, with anything in the real world. They'll tell you it's a more real world, but or a more ideal world, or an a priori world. So I think it's not a coincidence. Again, the effort to pull hashkafa out of, lumdus and halacha wasn't done so much by Reb Chaim or by the by Reb Elbel or even by Reb Moshe. And again, my view of Brisk and the connection between, the derech, and the role of halacha, let's say, and the hashkafic side is very heavily influenced, by the Rav's writings and by the Rav's persona. So I don't think it's surprising that it started that way, or even that it's remained that way as the emphasis for a lot of the world of Bris. But assuming that I'm accepting, the Rav's understanding of what the implications or the underpinning, whether they were conscious or unconscious, of what Bris was really all about. Accepting that, which I do, I just think it's very. I think it took somebody like the Rav, who had a certain self-awareness and a certain, broader, view of things, to kind of put his finger on it. But I do think it's the natural implication, and I think we see expressions of it even in the narrower application of, the more, very very focused, things that have been produced by Brisk. But I still think it's consistent with this, ideological orientation, which has implications. Therefore, the visceral, response to something like the Mussar movement, I think is totally consistent with that. So I think what you're saying is true, but I don't think it is a problem. I think it's, A, to have been anticipated, and B, is consistent with, but I think needs to go beyond it, to other things. Okay, so we'll stop. Sorry, we'll stop here, and we'll continue. Maybe I just want to speak a little bit about the attitude towards a little bit about what the Mussar movement originally was. Again, it adapted like Hasidut adapted, and I think for good reason. So speak a little bit about that, and then I'm going to start with Ish Halacha very quickly, just because that's obviously what I identify with most strongly. Then to talk a little bit about Chazon Ish and some of his pointed critique, and where I think it's a little bit different, and overlaps a lot, and what the differences are, I think, also highlight. And then speak a little bit of Rav Kook also, I think we said we would try to do. So, okay. To be continued.